know, if the waitress gives you too much change to give it back, if it's not walking a check, it's not trying to skirt the issues on, and it's not something you're trying to do for any righteousness sake, but it's the normal, natural response to the fear of God. And that if you do any of these things that the Gentiles do, the lie, the cheating, the stealing, what you're doing is saying that, first of all, you have no fear of God before your eyes, and second of all, anyway, that's another story. But then we got it down, came down to different people in the body who periodically lie. And then it came down to lying to yourself by the creation of these false worlds and false responses to flesh or to what your senses are. And then it came down to that the only way that integrity is possible is to give everything into the moment so that you're always here and always now. Because anything else from God's perspective is no integrity. Anyway, it's all been gelling in me that we now live in a society in which there is no integrity. There is no character. The values of integrity and character used to be at least given lip service to. But now it's just not done. And if we are the salt of the earth, then that must show forth, not in some priggish, self-righteous way, but just as the natural response is natural as breathing. But it all comes and originates from the fear of God. And then to tie the loop, the fear of God all comes from the proper understanding of the Feast of Pentecost. So, that's what I've been thinking about.
What's the thing about lying to yourself, taking the sensory input and then turning that into something and false worlds and all that stuff? It dawned on me this morning when we were walking, we were talking about it, and it dawned on me that, to say it dawned is even stupid, that is what mental illness is. I mean, that's what a nut does. That's what someone who is out of touch with reality and locked up in a padded room, it's just that their sensory lies and make-believe worlds aren't functional. So they got to be moved to the side. But everybody on the outside is doing the same exact thing. It's just that it happens to serve one another's, you know, it works smoothly. But the world is full of crazy people.
Well, again, as I said, integrity can only come by the fear of the Lord, and it can only come if you believe Romans, integrity, it says, we glory in tribulation, for in tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. The word for experience is a Greek word that means fully tested integrity. And so in a weird sense, it's only the tribulation that brings forth the tested integrity. Otherwise, it's just words. And the tribulation of it doesn't matter whether it's a penny or $10 million or, in my case, $5 million. I was offered $5 million to disappear. It wasn't even, and it isn't that I had any integrity, it's just that I feared God more than I mean, the idea of $5 million is just meaningless compared to the fear of God. But that same response has to come to us in the area of the smallest details of life. How often do we lie to gain an advantage over a person in a discussion? It's just, you know, and the body must be the, what's the word, the bellwether to each other of integrity. You know, and we must bust each other without reservation if we don't see it. Anyway,
I was really bothered yesterday, the day before, when I was talking to Barbara about the Cadillac something needs to be fixed to get it through inspection, and I said, well, here's my thought. My thought is we just take it and we do this temporary thing and get it through inspection and then it'll be fine. We'll save several $100. And she called me on it and it still upsets me. It just ran in my mind just now and it upsets me because until she said something and until I was able to calm down and hear what she was saying to me, I was totally convinced that that was fine and that there was
Well, I mean, I used to think that I had
some integrity, that, you know, that I wasn't that bad a guy. It's not true. I mean, I lie and cheat and steal all the time and think that I'm not. That's what, to be that deceived. It's like, I think I'm smart all the time. And I'm not. I think I know what's going on, and I don't. Jeez.
I feel the same way a lot of times. A lot. It's like when I told Doug about how often I think about stealing something, you know, picking up something that's not mine. And I said, it's just so damned ugly. And he said, well, multiply that times 100,000, and that's, you know, how ugly you are. And it's really true. We catch ourselves starting to, or lying or deceiving ourselves, trying to justify something, you know, and it's like, man, who, you know, how are you trying to convince this? You're arguing with yourself.
Well, that's in honor of integrity. We're going to read what is called the law. We're going to see if we can make it real and understand it.
What?
Let me remind you guys of something. In various times in the scriptures, in Nehemiah, and in various times for tabernacles, etc., it says that and the guy stood and the people stood and the law was read. Well, what does that mean? What it is, when it says that the law was read, it's Exodus 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23. So it's four chapters. 19, 20, 21, 22. Five chapters.
Here's his job.
All right.
Just for the record, Crystal already had it.
Crystal. This is Crystal.
I'm sorry, Tyler.
19, 20.
Same.
21, 22, and 23.
19, 20, 21, 22.
And this happened on the Feast of Pentecost in the third month. And we can go through all of it, exactly what was going on and which day and all that. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. For they were departed from Rephidim, and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called on him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bear you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then shall you be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people. For all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And these are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. The most important thing that you can understand about God's stuff, that if you shall keep my covenant, the covenant that he made with Abraham, the covenant promised everything that your heart could desire, but it fundamentally promised, as we said, what's reflected in the three pilgrimage feasts: acceptance, empowerment, and destiny, and all of the attributes and accoutrements that go with that. The important thing is to understand what the covenant is. And to understand the terms of the covenant, otherwise nothing in here will make any sense. The covenant that God made was that if you keep my commandments, now remember, the covenant was made before the law. You've got to hear this. Abraham didn't know anything about the law, didn't know anything about the shoulds and shouldn'ts. All Abraham knew how to do was live and be honest. And so here comes Abraham, and he's over here, and he keeps having these hints about God's stuff. And it's a slow, continually expanding awareness about God and the mystery of godliness. And so then on that peculiar evening or night, it says that Abraham experienced the horror of great darkness, and God cut the covenant. He put Abraham to sleep, and God alone cut the covenant. And what that means is that, and it meant it for everybody since then, in all these places, in all these times, that anyone that had ears to hear, is that the promises of God were there, the destiny of God was there, the acceptance, the full realization of who and what you were there, if you kept his commandments. Okay, but then God did this weird thing, and he said, I'll make this covenant with you, but then he put Abraham to sleep. And now he's making a covenant with himself. And he's saying to Abraham, even in his sleep, that you and your descendants, even if you screw up, since the covenant says one of us has to die, I will die in your stead. And all you have to do is understand that, accept that. And that's what produces the fear of God and the awe of God. So when it says, you've seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bear you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you'll obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all the people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy people. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. So now when we read the law here, All that's necessary for you to apprehend is to understand and see that every time, and we're gonna really go into what this stuff means. Every time you see you don't measure up, and you deserve to die because you didn't meet the standard, then remember that God died instead of you. Because you deserved, he didn't die for you, because that leaves your idolatry. He died instead of you. And that way you see the depth of your sin and then the gratitude that proceeds from that. That's the gospel. The gospel was preached unto Abraham, it says. And every person from the beginning on to the end that understood that is part of the bride, is part of the kingdom, is part of the mystery. All right? Get a little hint of that?
I don't know.
Bore us on eagle's wings.
I don't know what it is about. Verse 4 and 5. But hearing that tonight and reading those words, I feel like an incredibly ungrateful
ass. Good.
Sure. He discerned.
Ass is the word.
He discerned Christ.
It's like a cycle. It's like we were talking about earlier. You see all this stuff you do, and you realize you do it all the time. And you see how lousy you are, and then you realize, you know, that he died in your place. You know, it's like your salvation out of that. And now, you know, then you can be grateful, just like Perry was probably thinking then, you know, it's, you know, you just want to say thanks a million times, and it's just a cycle. You just go over and over and over.
It's just not complicated. It's real. I think that's what's hitting me, is that the God of the universe would say that. I mean, it's so simple. It's asking nothing.
And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. Wasn't that an interesting phrase? And all the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready against the third day. For the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, saying, take heed to yourselves that you go not up into the mount, nor touch the border of it. Whosoever touches the mount shall be surely put to death. There shall not a hand touch it, but he shall surely be stoned, or shot through. Whether it be beast or man, it shall not live. When the trumpet soundeth long, they shall come up to the mount. And Moses went down from the mount unto the people, and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said unto the people, be ready against the third day, come not at your wives. And it came to pass in the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mountain, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. Now, this is what happened. This is on the Feast of Pentecost. And the mountain itself was the wave offering. It quaked. Anyway. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by voice. And the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on top of the mount. And the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mount, and Moses went up. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go down, charge the people, lest they break through unto the Lord to gaze, and many of them perish. And let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. And Moses said unto the Lord, The people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for thou chargest us, saying, Set bounds about the mount and sanctify it. And the Lord said unto him, Away, get thee down, and thou shalt come up, thou and Aaron with thee, but let not the priest and the people break through to come up unto the Lord, lest he break forth upon them. So Moses went down to the people and spake unto them. All right. You get the picture.
What's all that break forth upon them stuff?
Die.
Why? I mean, why is that there? Why?
Because flesh can't touch God. You can't see God and live. If he breaks forth,
is there significance to the first or second verse where he said he laid the words before their faces instead of just saying he spoke it to them? Is that
made them understand it? It wasn't just words and vibrations in the air. Okay. Let's do the each person read seven verses trick now. Do you understand that? I mean, if you don't understand, I'm going to interrupt a lot, but if you don't understand something, holler.
The only thing I want to know is, I know about the Ten Commandments, but how did they, God didn't tell them the rest of these, did he? It wasn't the same day, though, was it?
No. He was up there 40 days, remember?
Yeah, I've always just heard that it was just the Ten.
No,
I knew this was part of the wall, but I wonder when that came about.
No, it was up. He was up there 40 days.
And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage.
Okay. You got to hear this now, that Egypt is always the world. He's brought us out of the world, out of bondage. Now listen to what the first commandment is.
Thou shalt have no other gods before me.
Doesn't mean that you make God your chief God. It means that you shall have no other value before God. I don't know if you can understand that. English doesn't translate it. You shall have no other opinions before God. You shall have no other, I mean,
anything.
Huh?
Anything.
Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I am the Lord thy God, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them.
Okay. What is a graven image? In the olden times, we had the graven images being, you understand that even the act of writing things down was considered a graven image?
Yeah.
Why? Why? What is it about that? A graven image is this opinion, this idea, this definition, this thing in your mind. And every idea in your mind of the way something should be or the way something shouldn't have been is a strange God. It's a graven image that keeps you from the moment of dependency on God. You understand that?
Well, even the writing down of the text puts you one more generation away from the spontaneity of the,
like the stuff that builds up inside a pipe.
This was not allowed. The Torah could not be written down. It wasn't until 250 BC that this was first written down, and the rabbis considered it the most evil thing that had ever happened on the face of the earth. To give you an idea of how far we've denigrated, from the time a child was 4 through the age of 7, they memorized the book of Proverbs. At 7, they memorized the book of Leviticus. When they had what's called the bar mitzvah, they didn't have that then, but the ceremony, the child had to have memorized all of the law and the prophets.
We can't
hardly
read books.
How far back was that?
Time of Christ. The people that sat in the Sanhedrin, the governing body of Israel, had to be able to translate in 70 languages, speak. Anyway.
About the step, third and fourth generation.
It just means it's going to continue forever. The flesh can't get it right. Because it always adds the next generation and adds another one.
Here's the pain.
Huh?
I'll fix it.
No, but I mean, if you understand the mystery of that statement? To the third, if the sins of the father go to the third and fourth generation, then if my son was guilty of the sin, then his son would go to the third and fourth generation, and it would go on forever. Got it?
Never ending.
Yeah, it's like...
It's like a way of saying...
When Adam ate that apple...
You're still...
It went through everything.
Right.
Like Ebola maxed.
Right. You know, in a way, you thought, well, that's not fair.
Well, I got an idea. Let's go up the mountain and tell him it's not fair.
That's not fair.
Hey, you.
Well, the only way, I've told you this before, but the only way you can understand this is to answer the question, where would you be if your grandfather hadn't been born? And that's how you can understand responsibility back to the generation. That's why each generation is a new thing. That's why each generation has to go to the cross and become only a vessel. Stop giving heed to feelings or ideas or emotions.
Well, those emotion things are the ones that are hard to get away from.
Oh, yeah, they are. Because they've got to be right, because they come with tears. I love it when people come. I love sincerity.
And showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments.
All right, so we've got, so far we've got what? I shall have none of the gods before me. I shall not make unto thee any graven image.
That's it.
So we got 1, 2 commandments, right?
Right. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain.
Okay. Everybody got that one down?
Well, there could be another one in verse 5. It says, thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them. Is that different from just having
it? It's just an expansion of it. Okay, you understand what it means to take the name of the Lord in vain? You really understand that?
We know the answer.
I didn't ask you if you know the answer. I asked you if you understood it. What is it?
That's what you said. You expounded upon that time that you spoke at the...
But do you understand what it means to you?
Put God's name on your will.
Put God's name on the futility of the flesh. All right.
Would that include, like, saying something's right? This is... You know, some thing in time and space to say that it's...
Probably also right. Means to say that something is wrong.
Judge. Or value.
You don't get the death penalty with these two.
Big time.
Don't what? The death penalty.
Each one of these is a penalty, punishable by death.
It's always scary because, you know, how can you have a problem when you already deserve the death penalty? I mean,
now you got it. That's why you live each moment. Take no thought for tomorrow. Surrender everything to each moment.
I think that's part of what hit me about verse 5. God's just saying, if you will obey my voice.
Because I thought the only way I can rest is if Christ is in me. And I can't rest. Tommy can't rest.
Well, when you're... Who is talking now? Who's crucified? Who's there? Well, the real Tylene's... Well, I mean, you understand? I mean, you can't... You got to get rid of that duality. That's what the rest is. The Sabbath is the destruction of duality. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, but yet not I that liveth, but Christ who liveth in me, and the life I now live in the flesh.
That's what I thought I was saying, that, you know.
Yeah, but you can't go back and forth between. It has to be everything is Him. There is no work. There is no, well, is this holy or is this Jesus?
But He would be the rest, and He would be the Sabbath, and He would be
the... But He is... Yeah, I know. Hear me. But the thing that you always... That always is deceiving. It says, and you who were enemies and alienated in your mind by wicked works, now has He reconciled. You understand? All of it is in here. It's how we judge. It's the judgments that we make. That, and all I'm asking you to do is to see that everything in your life is directly from the hand of God, and see it as such, as and enter into the rest in that arena and remain there. There is no panacea except Him. He is it. And that is the Sabbath. Therefore, if you're not at rest in every situation, then you cannot believe in the resurrection. You cannot believe, and you will always externalize it. I could be at rest if. I could be at rest if. Therefore, there remaineth a rest for you. that's available that quick. It doesn't ever have anything to do with circumstances. Never. And every time that you feel that it has something to do with the change in circumstances, then you, by definition, have broken the Sabbath, and you are guilty of the death penalty, and you die daily. For thy sake, we are delivered as sheep to the slaughter all the day long. Every time your mind thinks that a change in circumstance is necessary, you're guilty of violating the Sabbath, and the death penalty is your only hope. That's what I try to get people to see. They come, everybody's always coming to me for problems, right? I tell them the same thing every time. Die. Well, Harry just, we just had a meeting. Harry went, step 1, 2, 3, 4, proving why everything, all his problems in the universe were because of Barbara. I said, what, do you remember this kind of deal, Harry? Oh yeah, I forgot.
It's like in the first thing we read tonight, he says, if you will obey my voice, if you will hear my voice under whatever the circumstances are. So it's like, okay, let's change the circumstances and see what the idiot does.
Sure.
Will he hear my voice or not? Okay, fine. Now let's change the circumstances again. Will he hear my voice or not? It's sort of fun.
It all winds back up in the moment. It's like the evil one is never going to stop being the evil one.
That's why we die daily.
And we'll always say, these circumstances are wrong.
And the evil is if From a standpoint of naming the name of God, if someone teaches you how to change your circumstances in the name of God,
it's enabling the Antichrist.
Right. Then you are becoming, what you are doing is, you are empowering by an illegal method. You are empowering by something that is, from God's perspective, has only to do with the evil one. Think how many churches are empowering in the name of God, but in actuality are empowering in the name of Satan. But so do you. Every time you desire to change your circumstances, where you don't see that the only change that's needed is here. And once you see, if you consider it totally unpleasant, and you see, yet I know it's from the hand of God for His purpose, then once you know it's from the hand of God, then the reason for it being there is over, and God lets you free. All right.
12?
Yeah.
Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said unto Moses, speak thou with us, and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said unto the people, fear not, for God has come to prove you, and that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not.
His fear may be before your faces. God has come to prove, or to test you, and that his fear be before your faces, that you sin not. You know, I'm always accused of, because when we were first starting, and I kept talking about the abandonment of yourself, take no thought. Everybody accused me of preaching license. because they didn't know the fear of God. Therefore, they knew that if they didn't have these constraints, that they would go off into whatever their fears were. And so therefore, they had to attribute that to everybody. But listen to what he says. God has come to prove you or test you, and that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not. It's not any bunch of rules. It's his fear. And the fear, I don't know how to describe this, but the fear, if you don't fear God, you'll fear everything. If you fear God, you'll fear nothing. And there's no way to...
The people stood afar off, and Moses drew near into the thick darkness where God was.
The Lord said unto Moses, "This thou shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, ye have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. Ye shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall ye make unto you gods of gold."
Okay. The gods of silver and the gods of gold. All of these are parables or pictures. All of your gods of silver are the things that you think will redeem you. And the things that you think will redeem you are the things that you think will make you happy, will make you satisfied. What is your redemption? What do you believe? What is the lie? What is the silver idol that you've created within you that you believe will make you at peace and at rest and satisfied? Well, that's making unto you an idol of silver. And it says you should not make unto me an idol of gold. What is the idol of gold? The gold is the thing that will give you glory. What is your dream? What is your ambition? That's because both of them are acts of worship that deny the blood of Christ and deny the transfiguration of Christ. These aren't religious commonalities. These are universal. I mean, these are... Doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. What do you think? What's your redemption? What is your redemption? What will redeem you? Is it health? Is it a job change? Is it a money? That's why normally, almost universally, people believe that if they have more money, then they'll be okay. And that's why Christ was sold out for 30 pieces of silver. It's to show you that. Every time you believe you would be redeemed from your problems if you had more money, you are selling him out. Anybody sold him out lately? Now, instead of that, you shall make an altar of earth. What is the altar of earth? It's you. You present your body the living sacrifice. You surrender your significance into him. Well, I'm not too sure I want to do that. Well, you're in for some rough times because you're fighting against the Holy Spirit of God. Because that's the only thing he's doing. Okay. Who's reading?
An altar of earth thou shalt make unto me, and shalt sacrifice thereon thy burnt offerings, and thy peace offerings, thy sheep, and thine oxen. In all places where I record my name, I will come to thee, and I will bless thee. And if thou wilt make me an altar of stone, thou shalt not build it, but hewn stone, for if thou lift up thy tool upon it, thou hast polluted it. Neither shalt thou go up by steps unto mine altar, that thy nakedness be not discovered thereon. Now these are the judgments.
You understand what all that meant from 22 to 26?
No, 26.
Yeah.
25 I do, not 26.
Okay, 26. Look around in the religions of the world and you will always see an interesting thing. That the altar is always up. The place where somebody speaks from is always up. You always have to go up steps to get up to there. What it does is it's the sacerdotal spirit. It separates you from whoever is speaking or for whatever is happening. And it causes you to believe that there is the secular life and the spiritual life. And it causes, and as some people do all the time, you then trivialize the person that is speaking because you separate yourself from him and make him special. Nobody would do that, would you?
Except it's usually a two-way street.
What?
The one up there feeds off.
Oh, God. Somebody understand? That's sickening.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my sustenance from...
Yeah, adoring fans.
Adoring fans.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
The applause.
Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them, if thou bind. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize. I want to know about the stones. The hewn stones, is that because of the labor involved with that?
Changing yourself.
Changing.
Yourself.
You can't change it.
Okay. Or other people.
Yeah, nobody else can change it.
Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them. If thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing.
Okay.
If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his masters have given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her masters, and he shall go out by himself. And if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free, then his master shall bring him unto the judges. He shall also bring him to the door, or unto the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through. His master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever.
All right. That position in what you just read there is a revelation of the process of becoming a believer. But the last one is what Paul calls in Greek, it's doulos, a bond slave. And it's where they put an awl through your ear and they nail your ear through that hole to the doorpost of the house. There's a symbolic point in time that you, because of love now, not because of obligation, have agreed to serve only the interest of that other party forever, at the expense of every aspect of your own interest. Now that's what a believer is. And Paul puts his position as bond slave above his position as apostle or prophet or preacher or evangelist or anything else. First, there's the bond slave. Now, the mystery of God is to the world, that sounds terrible, but to the mystery of God, that is the purpose that you were created. Not to be a bond slave to another human being, to God himself. Now,
well,
here's a real.
Gets nailed to the cross.
There's a real upside to that because, I mean, being the servant of God in the natural, the servant of a master lives in the master's house, is under the master's protection,
is fed by the master, is taken care of by the master, and it says here for life.
Sure.
I mean, there's a real upside.
Now, the only ones that don't want to do that, and yet still call themselves believers, they're believing in the wrong God. They're believing in a God that wants to help them become God. You understand me?
Oswald Chambers, he says, don't forget the reason that you were saved, not to be your own God, but to serve God.
The word minister is the word, that word for servant.
I wonder who the God would be who would come and say, I'll help you become God.
The word for minister and the word for servant is the same.
All right. Do you understand? To nail your ear to the doorpost of the house and to say that I surrender myself and my significance to you, Father. Well, that's easy to do. I'll just go do that. I'll do it alone.
Yeah, right.
Who are the judges?
Hmm?
Who are the judges?
The elders.
So that's what it's saying, is even that can't be done alone.
No, because you'll con yourself.
Or like you were talking about with the false witnesses and people helping you see God, some other God.
I have a word from the Lord, and he's telling me to go to the Cayman Islands.
And if a man sells his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the menservants do. If she pleases not her master, who hath betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he hath dealt deceitfully with her.
Okay. Understand what that means?
That's a strange nation.
A strange nation, somebody other than one of like precious faith, anyone. The word for nation is the Hebrew word am, A-M, and it just means people. Okay. Sure, go ahead.
Is I don't understand that about let her be redeemed if she doesn't please him.
Well,
then she can be redeemed to sell her unto a strange nation.
No. He can't sell her to a strange nation.
God can't disown her.
Oh, he shall have no power.
The law is that you can't, with men, you can do all kinds of weird stuff with regard to slaves, but with women, you couldn't. Because in a woman's case, the marriage was arranged. And the husband could divorce the woman just by saying, I divorce thee. The marriage is over. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with females and women. It has to do with the mystery of the bride. It has to do with the idea that that's what has already happened to us. We have already been rejected by. The world didn't want us. And we were rejected by the world. And then God redeemed us. Amen?
Yeah, it says if she pleases not her master.
So I didn't please the God of this world.
It just struck me that the people said to Moses, you speak to us, but don't let God speak directly to us. It's like these things are, don't let God speak this directly to us. He speaks to us in these parables. He speaks to us in these things that we can see. Okay, if this man has this and does this, then this is the way that it is.
Right.
Because we can't stand to be spoken to directly.
You can't stand the parable.
We also
it's like the thing about break loose upon him. I'm thinking, not thinking about that, but the thing about the light that we can see hides the true light. It's like, we can't even deal with a man's maidservant. It's to protect us.
What does it mean with this saying, he hath dealt deceitfully with her?
Because that's what the God of this world did. Remember when you were little?
Promised us everything you gave us.
And you saw all of the possibilities. Options. And if you didn't, if they weren't, if you really didn't have any evidence for it, it didn't matter. Because you could go into your alone place and dream dreams.
The boy has a vivid
imagination. And then, now though, if you don't know it by now, the world has rejected you. You weren't suitable.
Is that the same whether you think you rejected it or it
doesn't matter,
or it hasn't worked for you, or whatever?
She's not her master.
It doesn't matter. But again, that's why it says that the world is crucified unto me, but then I unto the world. Because what has to happen, you have to, the world is crucified unto me, you know, but I unto the world. I mean, it's like, it's not only that they didn't want me, now there's nothing there that I want. I mean, it can't be a petulant thing. Well, I'll show you. I don't want you either. Because that's revealed in how you respond to stimulus. It's revealed in your thought process. It's revealed in whether or not you're at peace and how much time you spend internally.
There's no there anymore.
There's no there. All right. Let's quit. That's a good place to quit.
That stuff is so obvious once you see it. It's like,
it's cool when it's laid in front of your face as opposed to a list of
shit you should know.
Thou shalt not, as opposed to here's what it is, here's what it's really saying, here's what it's going on.
Let's go to Galatians 6 a minute before we say goodnight. Before we say goodnight.
What chapter?
Chapter 6. Verse 12. As many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh. Make things look good. Make a fair show in the flesh. The word make a fair show is a word in Greek which means put on makeup. And as many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh, they constrain you to be circumcised. In other words, you need to change. You need to stop doing that. Lest they should suffer persecution for the cross of Christ. In other words, they don't want to be embarrassed by you.
It's my mom. Wear your makeup.
It's all moms.
You, when y'all wear your makeup, you look bad and you embarrass me.
Fuck you.
Hey.
What
church music.
That really embarrasses me.
Wish you'd go to a real church. Send your kids to a real school.
Yeah, the next verse, career. It says, for neither they...
For neither they themselves, who are circumcised, keep the law, but they desire to have you circumcised or you changed, that they may glory in your flesh.
Evangelist.
But God forbid that I should glory, save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world. You understand? On the one hand, it's pretty easy. I mean, if you're a failure, you're a fuck up. Everything's you finally admit it. You say, okay, I'm screwed up. And so then, the world is crucified unto you. I mean, you're crucified unto the world. But then it takes a great act of grace to cause the world to be crucified unto you. In other words, you have to see that even that there isn't anything out there I wanted anyway. You understand? So the cross has to be both the world crucified unto you and you unto the world. And for some of you, that's a problem. Anyway, that's enough. Take a big guy.